It's good to see the Ozark contingent back there. Good to have you guys passing through. Thanks for being with us. An added blessing. I can't walk into this building without just a flood of memories coming back. And it's been 50 years, believe it or not. Been 50 years since I overheard a conversation between Sam Lawing, my grandfather, and my dad. And the conversation was, where we are attending church, a little congregation way out in the country by us. It was close. It was convenient. We had moved from Kenwood, where I'd grown up or spent, you know, early years there. They were discussing what the congregation was providing us kids. The classes weren't really organized. It was just kind of a week-to-week thing. They did have a located minister that they seemed to have trouble keeping, kind of rotate through that from time to time. And my dad was concerned for spiritual growth. Now let's be clear. Parents, you're responsible for the spiritual growth of your children. That's your responsibility. It's not the church's responsibility. But the church can play a huge role in that, in helping you with that, as parents, as teachers, and especially in the area of teaching in the classes, obviously, in the area of fellowship, in the area of role models. I know my children, they felt like we were punishing them if they didn't get to go to church, because that's where their friends were. That's where the important people to them were. And so that was key. That was crucial. So Dad and Granddad, at Granddad's suggestion, I'm sure, suggested that we come to Gregory 50 years ago. I know Linda and Brenda haven't changed too much in that brief period of time. But it's just hard to believe that we're at this point. And that did, I guess, I have no test. I guess that changed my life. I don't know. I don't know what my life would have been like if it had gone the other way. I met Laura here. We had Amanda and Cassie here. Some of you got to know them and influence them in some way. Of course, Drew was born out at Smart Road, and maybe that's what's wrong with him. I don't know. We're prayerful about Drew. He's quite a kid. But I'd love to know the hand of God, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you love to know divine providence? That conversation so long ago has affected my life to this day. I firmly believe that the fellowship that I had here, the training that I had here, the people that I associated with here, the examples of wholesome families and leadership, all of those things influenced my life tremendously. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for that. You know, Ecclesiastes, the 9th chapter, tells us that time and chance happens in life. Like a fish caught in a cruel net, our lives are subject to randomness. And that's got to be true. There's a randomness to life. Somebody hits you in a car, wasn't intending to do that, a random act, whatever. And then you have your will, right? We get to make choices. We get to decide what's going to happen. The Lord allows me that as much as within my control, as we were saying in class this morning. We can't control that. But where does God fit into all of that? How does God fit into all that? Stop and look at your life. Stop and look at your life. Think about people. Think about events. Think about times that have passed. How they've influenced you. For the good, for the bad. How many of those were bad decisions on my part? I can assure you the ones that didn't go well were my decisions. But I had so many people around me to bring me success. And therein, you know, we could press on to a wonderful talk about the function of the church and all of the things that it does for us, and how God was given us such a wonderful gift, as he says in Ephesians 4 there, those gifts that are found in the body. But this morning I want to look at, along those lines, we'll try to come back to that. I appreciated the reading this morning. The vessels of honor, 2 Timothy 2, classic, thank you, excellent reading. But you notice there he uses the word prepared. The word prepared is in there. A vessel of honor prepared to serve. Prepared to serve. God prepared the world for his Son. We know that. God prepared the world by sending through his prophets 350 or more prophecies. He's coming. In 350 different ways, God said Jesus is coming. And when did he start? I think Genesis 3. Pretty early, didn't he? God told us he's coming. And as we also said in class, when God says it, it's going to happen, right? And all the way up to the cross, within 24 hours of the cross, Jesus concluded, Jesus fulfilled 28 separate prophecies about him in the final 24 hours. That's more than one an hour. That's amazing, isn't it? Something that could have been said 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years before, Jesus, as he approaches the cross, fulfills it. During that period of time, the world was under a very harsh Roman rule. The Jews, because of that Roman rule and so many other things, were ready for the Messiah. I think there was others maybe outside the Jewish faith that might have even been a little more focused and understood a little bit more about what God said about Jesus and the preparation that had been made. Throughout the earth, in some cases they saw the star, did they not? And they came. People that believed what God said. People believed the preparation that God had made for the world. The world was unified under the Romans. The Greeks before had done a lot to bring us the Greek language, right? To unify the world in language. Roman brought the roads and prepared the way for the gospel to be spread throughout the world. The known world at that time anyway, right? The Pax Romana. 200 years of unprecedented peace the world had never seen before. And this is the perfect moment that God brings Jesus into the world. A time that he had prepared for at that point, what, 4,000 years? Right? As I've gone through those lists time to time of the things that God has done to prepare the world for his Son, I've often overlooked, I think, one of the premier preparations that he's made. And I want to go through that this morning with you just a little bit. And while we do this, I want you to think about your life. I want you to think about the things that you've been allowed to do, the things that you've been exposed to. Let's see, we go to 5 till, right? Try to remind me, we'll have a 5-minute thing so Paul can correct whatever I've said and get us straight. But this other preparation I want to talk about, in my mind, is so far removed from anything I could imagine, anything that I could come up with. And that's the interesting thing about God. He has solutions that we can't dream of. He has preparations that we can't begin to imagine. I remember in Bill's class this morning, I think one of the last verses that you read was about Melchizedek. Now, who in the world could have ever gone back to the Old Testament and had that event happen, right, and have such a profound effect on the Jews and the preaching of the gospel other than Melchizedek? It's amazing how these things just blend together, but is your life really much different? Is God not involved in our lives today? Does the Spirit not work within us if we allow him to? Is this not the hand of the Spirit as we see these things unfold before our eyes? Our time here is so short. Our time here is so brief. And yeah, it's time for an old comment. You know, the older you get, right? You're just amazed. Just amazed. And when you look in the mirror, you're reminded, right? I remember my grandmother, Techmeyer, some of you probably knew her. She, in her latter years, she would look in the mirror and she'd say, "That's not me. That's not me. I'm still a 20-year-old girl just meeting Churchill and starting my life." Had no idea she was going to have two boys and all the things that occurred. This thing I want us to consider started in the town called Tarsus. Tarsus was a major trade center. It's about 12 miles from the Mediterranean Sea. And Tarsus was a very hub of Roman activity. Population was about 500,000, half a million people at the time of Jesus. A lot of the wealthiest Romans lived there. There was a lot of advantages to living in Tarsus. They had two primary exports that I could find out about. One of them was timber. And the other export that came out of Tarsus, interestingly enough, was long-stranded fine goat hair. Long-stranded fine goat hair. Do you know what you use long-stranded fine goat hair for? You know what you use it for? Primarily, back then, building tents. Building tents. That's what they used it for. It's perfect. Perfect for tents. A really strong material that was plentiful. They had lots of goats in that area. Tarsus was also a huge center of commerce. Lots of commerce came through Tarsus. Trade from all around the world brought people from all around the world, brought cultures from all around the world. Imagine, you know, a city, not one of my favorite towns, but, you know, New York. What a boiling pot of all kinds of different cultures and people and traditions and habits, whatever. I think we could put Tarsus in that category. Obviously, Tarsus was a hub of Greek intellectuals, Greek philosophy, primarily because one of the three largest libraries in the world at that time was in Tarsus. You had Alexandria, you had Athens, but equally as important was the library at Tarsus. At Tarsus, there was also a huge university there. I was looking, Kevin, just Google Tarsus University, and it was reestablished like 20 years ago or something. Somebody reestablished the Tarsus University. But there was a university that was started in 67 BC in Tarsus. And so you had all these intellectuals and had all these people bumping into each other. They thought they was all really smart, you know, and have to, you know how it happens on college campuses. You know, we get to exchanging all these intellectual ideas and we think a lot of ourselves and those kind of things. I'm not talking about Kevin, of course. He's a very humble person. but this is what was common on the streets of Tarsus. Tarsus had one of the largest libraries in the world as well. Libraries tend to go with universities. They had over 200,000 books in this library. Now, back then, mass production of books wasn't so much, right? So it all had to be written down on papyrus or something like that. So imagine a large library of over 200,000 books. And a lot of it, I was interested in reading this, a lot of it had to do with scientific works of the time. So I don't know what kind of scientific works were going on in the first century, but there must have been something because they had written it down. And, of course, there was great Roman rule there. Caesar worship was practiced. Pompey, when he came through in 67 B.C., he honored Tarsus for being loyal to the Roman crown, the Roman rule. And he made it the capital over the province of Cilicia. And with that came the freedom from imperial taxes and the allowance of self-government. You could govern, they could govern themselves. They had their own synod there. And as long as they were within what the Romans wanted them to be, they were pretty much left to themselves. Another thing that came with this honor that Pompey bestowed upon Tarsus was Roman citizenship. And Roman citizenship, even to Jews. There were Jews in Tarsus that were Roman citizens. It's interesting, isn't it, how this all kind of blends together and how Pompey, you know, did this thing. And You got the library, and they did that thing. You got the university, you got that thing. And, of course, this is where Paul grew up. Saul, at the time. But this was his hometown. Saul could walk the streets of Tarsus and run into all kinds of intellectuals. He could have. We don't know. He could have attended some of the university that's going on there. No doubt he made himself available to the library that was there. But imagine the cultures. Imagine the experiences that a young Saul, and we know Saul, he was a guy of fire, of great fervor, of great drive. And what do you think that was on his mind as his parents established themselves as Roman citizens? As he has access to all these intellectuals? Oh, I'm going to do all this for Jesus. I'm going to use it all for the Lord. Do you think that was his first thought? Well, they were very pious. And, of course, Paul became very high up in the Jewish faith, Pharisee. But all this was foundation for what Paul didn't even understand. He had no idea. Pieces of a puzzle that was going together that Paul had no idea what the cover of the puzzle box looked like. He thought, I speculate, Paul thought this would lead to some great position within the Jewish faith. High priest. Now we know that during this period of time the Jewish system was corrupted from what God designed. Verse down. What God designed, what God had in mind for the Jewish system, what had become, especially in the area of high priest, of course, was high priest now was very much a political position, and the Roman government had as much to do with that as anybody as to who was high priest. But Paul Paul states in Acts the 22nd chapter, the 3rd verse, I am indeed a Jew, born in the Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in Jerusalem at the feet of Gamaliel, taught according to the strictness of our father's law, and was zealous towards God, as you are all today. He had a zealousness. He had a drive. He had all this foundation. He had all these opportunities to be a great man within the Jewish faith. He had exposure and opportunity to sit at the feet of Gamaliel. Now, he was a doctor. He was a doctor that we run into in Jerusalem a couple times, actually. Remember when Peter in Acts chapter 5 and the other apostles were in trouble. And Peter says, you know, we ought to obey God rather than men. The Sanhedrin heard this in verse 33. They were furious and plotted to kill him, Peter. Then stood up one in the council, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a doctor of the law, had in reputation among all the people, and commanded. Like that word commanded there. Doesn't appear like this was somebody that was just given their opinion. He commanded and put the apostles forth in a little space. So Gamaliel stood up amongst all of these leaders and said, let's give these guys some space. If this is of God, then so what are we going to do? Right? Remember the conversation? Highly educated. Amazing zeal. Taught by one of the most powerful, probably, doctorates of Judaism at the time. Saul. The 22nd chapter of Acts. Paul says there, I persecuted this way unto the death, binding and delivering into prison both men and women. As also the high priest bears me witness, and all the councils and elders from whom I received letters to the brethren, and went to Damascus to bring in chains even those who were there in Jerusalem to be punished. How did Paul feel about Jesus? How did Paul feel about this person that claimed to be the Messiah? He was so committed to his background, so committed to his training, so committed to the things that he had been exposed to all of his life, that he hated them. He hated it. He did not want to see the Jewish faith compromised by this ne'er-do-well, late-coming person in Jesus Christ, claiming to be God. At the stoning of Stephen, and Saul was that's Acts chapter 8, I figured you probably knew that. And Saul was consenting unto his death, Stephen's death. And at the time there was a great persecution against the church, which was at Jerusalem. And they were all scattered abroad throughout the regions of Judea, Samaria, except the apostles. Consenting there. Now this is what Paul was doing, Saul. Sorry. This is what Saul was doing while Stephen was being stoned. He was consenting. Now, the Greek in consenting here indicates that he took pleasure in it. It wasn't something that he just stood by and said, good idea, guys. No, he was gratified. The word means to be gratified, pleased, to take pleasure in. This is something that Saul felt justified in doing, killing these people, killing Stephen for what he believed. And again, in 8 and 3, it says here, as for Saul, he made havoc. That's an interesting word, isn't it? Saul made havoc of the church, entering into every house, hailing men and women, committing them to prison. And then on to the 9th chapter, and Saul breathing out threats and slander against the disciples and the Lord, went into the high priest, and there desired of him letters to Damascus, to the synagogues, that if he found any in this way, whether they be men or women, he might bring them bound into Jerusalem. Paul had it. He asked for and he received the power to go beyond Jerusalem. The power to go to other synagogues, searching these people out. He's going to weed these folks out. He's going to take care of this. You don't think Paul thought he was a powerful man? He was committed to Judaism. He was committed to his training. He was committed to the things he'd been taught. It's interesting when we think that Luke wrote the book of Acts. I ask you, and again we speculate, how did Luke know about these events? He wasn't there, I don't think. We don't see Luke until the second missionary journey, right? How did Luke know, outside of the Holy Spirit, I'll give you that, how did Luke know that Paul had done these things? If it wasn't for all the miles that he journeyed with Paul. And I think all the remorse. Paul called himself the chiefest of sinners, didn't he? And I got to believe that it was hard when Barnabas brought him back to Jerusalem to face people whose possibly husbands he had killed. How do you talk to a widow about Jesus when just a few months earlier, years maybe, you had arranged for her husband to be killed, drug off before the Sanhedrin, killed for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ? How did Luke know? I think Paul told him. Paul told him in shame. We've got decisions in our life that we've made that makes us feel like the chiefest of sinners at times, I think. In pretty good company, I think, when we consider Paul. Look at Paul's resume that he records there in Philippians, the 3rd chapter. Circumcised in the 8th day of the stock of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin, Hebrew of Hebrews. Concerning the law, a Pharisee. Concerning zeal, persecuted the church. Concerning the righteousness which is in the law, blameless. Paul saw himself as a Jew, blameless. But what things were gained to me, these have I counted for loss for Christ. Yet indeed I also count all things loss for the excellence of the knowledge of Jesus Christ my Lord. for whom I have suffered loss in all things and count them rubbish. I like the King James on that, dung, that I may gain Christ. That I may gain Christ. What did Paul leave behind to follow Jesus? What did Paul leave behind to follow Jesus? And what did he gain? Now, we were talking about there in class this morning. We got to remember the promises. We have to remember the things that are set before us. The joys are not necessarily guaranteed in this world. What did Paul get in exchange for probably a life of luxury, a life of recognition, a life of wealth, a life of power? What did he gain? What did he leave behind? Second Corinthians 11th chapter, he gives us a little list of a few things, and some of these aren't even recorded. We don't even know when some of these things occurred. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure. That's what Paul got. In prisons more frequent, in deaths often. Can you think of how many times Paul was put to death that they thought he had? From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. Night and day, I've been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robberies, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils of the sea, in perils of false brethren. Sometimes those are the hardest kind, aren't they? False teaching. Brethren that are so adamant, they're right. In weariness of toil, in sleeplessness often, hunger and thirst, fasting often, cold and naked. Besides these things, what comes upon me daily? Paul says the list isn't done yet. This is what I traded. This is what I traded. For all the recognition, all the power a fellow could want. A perfect start. You know, I think of Joseph when I was putting this together. I was thinking about Joseph. Remember when his brothers finally came to him and he was in Egypt? And the brothers had done all kinds of mischief. You know, they thought they sold him off. And, you know, it was a long list of things that the brothers did. You remember what Joseph said? Genesis 50th chapter. 20th verse. But as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save many people's lives. Our view of this amazing tapestry that we're a part of, just a very small thread. Insignificant. I'm with David. Lord, why would you even consider me? Why consider me? I'm nothing compared to the omnipotent creature that has always existed. Why me? And yet God can take these things that occur in our lives just like he did Paul's. Things that happened, things that were opportunities that he had no idea. What Jew could withstand Paul's reasoning? If you want to get a great defense of the gospel from a Jewish perspective, who are you going to read? Paul's going to nail it down tight. I'm with Bill. I put Hebrews in Paul's category just because, I mean, that was Paul's strength. He was a Pharisee. He knew all that. He bought it, hook, line, and sinker. And he gave it all up. Vessels of honor. According to the reading, right? 2 Timothy. Do you see yourself as a vessel of honor? Have you felt the Master's hand working the clay? Do you have in your life skills, abilities, relationships that maybe even God has provided as an opportunity for you? You know, it took quite an event to change Paul's direction, didn't it? Can we be so different? Can there not be some commitment and say, Lord, I see all the things that you've done for me. I see all the opportunities that you've given me. I recognize that the things that I have chased throughout this life, recognition, money, position, power, whatever it is that's of interest, let me count those things as dung. Let me use these things to your glory. Let me teach me to open my mouth and share the gospel. Here's a quick test for you. Here's a quick test. Now that wasn't two hands, was it, Paul? Okay. Of all the skills and the abilities, the things, the experiences in your life, the classes that you've sent through, just being in this building, this week, the last month, have you used those in some way to God's glory? Has it brought you to the conclusion that you need to talk to somebody? Somebody that's lost. Paul said he set all those things aside that he might share the gospel, that he might save some. And thank the Lord, as I read his writings, he saves me, right, Paul? Who is it that you have targeted? Who is it that you are going to bring to bear? All of the experiences, all the things that are in your life that could be used to God's glory. Brethren, today I think we live in a world that's quickly changing, and yeah, I'm an old guy, but it is quickly changing. And it behooves us, and I appreciate the faithfulness of this congregation to drive a stake and stay, right? We're going to stay. We're going to proclaim the gospel, we're going to reflect it, whether it's positive or not. That's going to be more and more the test. But I think God has equipped each one of us to stand our ground with the power of the Holy Spirit. Very few people are using this book anymore. Very few people find this book to be their authority when it comes to religion. And that's going to become more and more and more the case as we get more, if I can use the word, woke. As the world goes woke, we got to stand. It's not going to be popular. And there's going to be people that you need to talk to. One on one. Don't worry about some huge mass thing. Every time I see the gospel preached in the Word of God, it's mano a mano for the most part, unless the Lord was preaching to 5,000 or 4,000. What is it in your life that you can bring to bear, like Paul, God has given you? Maybe you didn't intend to use it that way, but maybe it can be used that way, to God's glory, to share the gospel. Let me take a few minutes here, and I'll shut up and take your comments. Thank you. Coherent? I appreciated your energy in the song leading, Denny. Or Denton, I'm sorry. We go back far enough. I can. We go back far enough. I can do a Denny once in a while, can I? Think about your life. Think about how you spend your time. Think about who was it? Who was the last person that you just sat and visited with about the gospel, about Jesus? Has he done anything for you? God's equipped you. God's equipped you thoroughly, I think. When we look at Ephesians 4 and the gifts that were given to the church and the equipping of the saints, brethren, we are equipped. I have a very close friend that's a Jew, and it amazes me how little he knows of the Old Testament. He knows very little. It's more of a culture than it is anything. But we have knowledge. We have understanding. Do we have the faith to use that as Paul did to God's glory? This time is short. How much time do you think you got? 50 years ago, I wouldn't have guessed I'd be standing here using a walker trying to get up here. Any other comments? I thank you for your time, for your indulgence. It's been a blessing to be with you indeed, to look out on faces that have helped shape my life. I'm thankful. My life's not what it should be, but I truly believe that this congregation played a key part in making my life what it has become, and I'm thankful for that. I pray the Lord to mercy as I press forward, that I might be able to accomplish something to His glory. If you are outside of Christ, if you have not accepted the gospel, I pity you. You're chasing the wrong dream. Your priorities are all mixed up. Someday every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. It's a whole lot better if you would just go ahead and confess Him today before He comes than after. There are promises that you can't begin to comprehend. There are blessings in the body that you cannot begin to understand. And you won't get them all here. This is just a deposit. This is just a deposit of the wonderful things to come for how long? How long is it, Jerry? We get to spend eternity in heaven, don't we?
Forever.
That's a long time, I think. And you know what? I'm looking forward to flying. I don't know if I've mentioned that before. But I don't think my knee will hurt while I'm flying. I'm just pretty convinced of that. Something to look forward to. As we stand and sing the song that Denton has chosen for us. Thank you.